I made a new version of the notes. I just sort of integrated into the textbook. And I rewrote a lot of little things in there to make it make more sense relative to the rest of the book. So a few announcements. I'll continue talking about these notes on Monday of next week, and I think I'll finish them on Monday. We won't finish them today. One reason is that I'll probably stop about 5 to 10 minutes early today, so I have to go to the airport really quickly.
Where are you going?
Going to Berkeley. Having dinner with Rivet tonight. With Ken Rivet tonight.
Was he the one in the video?
Yeah. So I'll pick it up there. Also, the homework for this week is at the end of the new version of the notes. There are 3 problems. You can see listed there. So if you look at the back, you'll see the new homework. Okay? And a little bit of this homework you won't know how to do until probably Monday. But so you should definitely do, I think, the first 2 problems before Monday and the last problem on Monday and Tuesday. There's a new version of the notes, as I was just saying. Yeah, that's why I opened the door. We should open the other door too. We'll be working on this through next Monday, as I just mentioned. And we'll be stopping a little bit early today. Thank you.
Because of me flying up to Berkeley, my flight is leaving at 6 o'clock.
So the goal today is for me to describe to you more explicitly what the homology of X naught of N is, in the sense that you can, in a computable sense. So the hope today is that at the end of this lecture, if somebody were to say to you, what is a modular symbol, you have an answer. So the goal is that you'll have some idea of a definition of a modular symbol, and 2, how you compute modular symbols, or that modular symbols are computable. New version of the notes. Okay, recall that last time I talked about the problem of computing S2 gamma 0 of n, the space of cusp forms of weight 2 for the congruent subgroup gamma 0 of n. Gamma 0 of n is the group of matrices that are upper triangular modulo n. And the space, well, you can't compute it in the same way that you compute level 1. You have to use different methods. And the different methods, the different methods I'll talk about in this class involve modular symbols. There are other methods involving quaternion algebras or trace formulas that involve computing lots of class numbers that also would allow you to get at this space. There are actually a number of different methods. But the best general purpose method, in my opinion, is modular symbols from a practical point of view. And that's what I'll tell you about now. And in order to sort of understand S2 gamma 0 of n, we considered a pairing between S2 gamma 0 of n and the homology of the modular curve X0 of n. And remember, X0 of n, it's called a modular curve, but over the complex numbers, it's a Riemann surface, and it's the quotient of the upper half plane by the action of gamma 0 of n. You identify the set of equivalence classes for the equivalence relation, which says 2 things are equivalent if you can get from one to the other via the action of a linear fractional transformation in gamma 0 of n. And a picture of this is, at least topologically, which is all you need for the definition of this, homology group is a G-hold torus. That's what it is topologically. And here the number of holes is equal to the dimension of S2 canvas row of n. And I did not prove that those two are equal, but S2 gamma 0 of n, this is a complex vector space and it's isomorphic to the space of differential forms on this Riemann surface. And the dimension of the space of differential forms is the same as the genus, which is the same as number of holes. So a whole bunch of sort of equivalent definitions of an integer attached to a Riemann surface. The dimension of this, which is the same as the dimension of the holomorphic differentials on the Riemann surface. So we had two things, the space of cusp forms of weight 2, so holomorphic functions on the upper half plane that are that vanish at the cusps and that satisfy f bar gamma 2 equals f for all gamma and gamma not n. So these guys, this set of functions, which is a finite dimensional complex vector space, pairs with homology classes to give complex numbers. And homology classes are these formal sums of differences of little closed paths on the modular curve, where you can take pluses or minuses, and closed paths, you can deform them as long as you don't rip them, you get equivalent closed paths. So this pairing was the following, or is the following. Given a modular form F and a homology class X, to use the same notation as in my notes, you get, well, that maps to f comma x, which is by definition 2 pi I times the integral along half x of f of z dz. Where the meaning of the integral along the path is, well, we view this as a quotient of the upper half plane, so any little sufficiently small interval around a point on the path, you view it as the image of a path on the upper half plane, and then you integrate this function along that path on the upper half plane. So you have a pairing and a fact about this pairing, which isn't too surprising. It's actually a general fact about Riemann surfaces is that this is non-degenerate. So right now, just summarizing last time. So a non-degenerate pairing. Moreover, the fact that it's non-degenerate means that you have a homomorphism, or an isomorphism, in fact, between S2 gamma 0 of n, this is isomorphic to the linear dual of h1 x mod of n z. So these are all homomorphisms to C, but is this okay? So given a cusform, you get a function from the homology to the complex numbers, which is integration against that cusform. So you get an f that maps to the function that sends x to f comma x. So every homology class, you get a complex number. And the fact that this pairing is non-degenerate and the fact that the dimension of the homology is 2g tells you that this is an isomorphism. So if you can compute the thing on the right, then you can compute the thing on the left. If you can compute homology, then you can compute cusp forms. And this thing on the right, well, you need a little bit more because you can compute them abstractly. They're both complex vector spaces of dimension g. Abstractly, this is just isomorphic to C to the g, as is this. You really want more information. You want to know how the Heck operators act on both sides. And to figure out how Heck operators act, it would suffice to understand how the Heck operators act on this. But to do that, we really need a much more explicit presentation of this than just it's some group that's generated by these loops. So that's what modular symbols can do. So now you can forget all of this motivation. This is purely motivation. And then wonder about the basic question, how can you compute the homology of x0 of n? the homology of the upper half plane modulo gamma 0 of n. That's what modular symbols give you. So how is it possible to compute it in an extremely explicit way where you could moreover compute the Heck operators acting on the homology? More than just knowing it as an abstract group, but knowing it very explicitly where you have actual paths and so on. So here's the idea. Here's the upper half plane, and here is its quotient. I'm just recopying that. By the action, the linear fractional transformations of the group gamma 0 of n. So this is the upper half plane star, so I'm including the rational numbers and the point at infinity. And this at the bottom is h star. The gamma 0 of n equivalence classes of the L of h star. So nothing here. Stick the other half plane. So here's a way to get homology classes down here. They're relative homology classes. I know I'm repeating a little bit from last time, but that's okay. You take two rational numbers, alpha and beta, and you draw a path from one to the other, and it should be oriented. The order matters. And I'll denote this path by alpha, beta. The braces are for historical reasons. That also looks kind of like a set, but the order does matter. So I wish that the notation did not kind of look like the order doesn't matter, but unfortunately that's simply the notation that's been around for 30 or 40 years. So this means, this is simply a notation that means that a path from alpha to beta, but it doesn't really matter which path you choose as long as it's not ridiculously complicated. If you deform it a little bit, you'll get the same homology class down here. So when you have a path like that, you map it down and you get a path down here. It goes around there, and it comes back, it loops around. It can be very complicated. It might not end up at the same place because alpha and beta need not be equivalent modulo the action of gamma 0 of n. So you might not get a homology class, but you do get a homology class relative to the cusps. So alpha beta determines an element of homology of x 0 of n. But we just slightly relax the definition and allow, instead of closed paths, you allow paths that go from one cusp possibly to another. Now, the question is, how do you think about what you get via this construction? So here's one big important theorem that was proved by Manning in the 70s, and that's that if you consider all possible pairs alpha beta, where alpha and beta run through q1 and q, I'll state this again in a minute more notationally. If you consider all pairs, take their images here, you will get, and then take what that generates, you'll get this entire thing. So there's no weird homology classes relative to the cusps that you can't realize as paths like this. It's not really that surprising, because if you imagine a path down here between two cusps, you could take its inverse image up here, or at least take something locally, you could take its inverse image up here. Its inverse image, this map has infinite degrees, so its inverse image would be too big. But if you take just locally, you take a little piece of inverse image, then you could certainly imagine putting everything together and getting a path up here that goes between cusps, since this path down here goes between cusps, and you get it. But really, there's some work to prove it. And the work involves taking this object right here and triangularizing it. You really go through the definitions of algebraic topology. You find a triangularization, and you explicitly compute the relative homology from the definition. And you figure out exactly what paths down here are needed to generate. And then you find that they all come from paths up here. If you want to read more about that, you can look at Manning's paper or notes I wrote for a course called Math 252 at Harvard, I think 2 years ago. So I went through Manning's proof in that class and typed up this. So I think it was 252. Those are on my website. So that's this argument, that you get every homology class from these. Okay, but now let's get back to something computable. Yes, please.
What are the paths from a cusp, like what the path from alpha to infinity?
Mm-hmm.
What is it, anything weird, or what is it?
No, nothing weird. It's just, it's, down here it doesn't look any different really. I mean, it's, there's nothing particularly special about it.
And up there, is there some convention?
What do you mean? It's perfectly fine. I mean, it looks like this. It's just an infinite path. But if you consider the upper half plane with the Poincaré metric, which I haven't defined at all, then that, even that path is not infinite. It's finite length. I encourage you to read about the Poincaré metric, which is also described in some detail in this class.
What is it? You can't stay with this quickly.
I don't want to, but
is there some connection about where you pretend that the cusps get projected down to?
They get projected down to the equivalence classes of the cusps here. So, I mean, that's a trivial statement, but I don't think there's, what kind of convention could you imagine?
When you've got putting one per.
Oh, I mean per like thing here? I don't think there's really a relation between the number of cusps and the genus. There's not a simple relation. For example, if p is a prime, there are always two cusps, but the genus can be arbitrarily large. The genus is roughly p over 12, but there are exactly two cusps when p is a prime. We could probably even prove that if we wanted to, but if p is prime, the cusps are 0 and infinity. Those are the only cusps. And in other words, every rational number is equivalent modulo the action of gamma 0 of p to either 0 or infinity. Okay. And there's, of course, not surprisingly, if you take the path from 0 to infinity, which is really the one path between the two cusps, you have lots of other cusps here that you can take paths between them. These are the two equivalence classes of cusps, and the path from 0 to infinity plays an extremely significant role in the arithmetic of elliptic curves and modular curves. Basically, Mieser's paper where he classifies the possible torsion subgroups of elliptic curves over Q really amounts to a very, very careful study of the modular symbol 0 to infinity. Also, understanding special values of L functions turns out to, as I hope I'll show you guys someday, to be equivalent to understanding this modular symbol as well, at least for L functions attached to elliptic curves. Yes, because the genus, there's a simple elementary formula for the dimension of S2 gamma 0 of n. And for p, it's essentially p over 12 plus or minus 0 or 1. So it's almost the same as that. So you can certainly get anything. Well, sorry, that's a different question. You can get arbitrarily large. An interesting question, though, is can you get anything? And in fact, one of the guys I was a grad student with at Berkeley wrote a paper about this, where they find sort of a list of n that do not occur as the genus of x not n. And they completely study the question of which n's occur. And it's kind of tricky, actually. His name is Janos Kacharik. If you want to find, go to his website, you can find out the complete answer to that question, which wasn't known until. Actually, I think the paper he wrote, he co-authored with Joe Weatherall, who gave the postage stamp talk here earlier. But these guys figured out what the possibilities are for the genus as you vary through n. These proves some neat things about it. Okay. All right, so back to our story. I'm going to tell you how to deal with this picture computationally. By the way, another thing to emphasize. If alpha, let's say alpha is equivalent to some cusp alpha prime, then the modular symbol alpha beta, which gives you some homology class down here, relative homology class down here, can easily be different than the homology class alpha prime to beta, even though alpha and alpha prime are equivalent. The reason is because though the two endpoints will map to the same endpoints down here, when you take the image of that path down here, this one, the one that goes from alpha prime to beta, so here we're thinking of alpha prime as being gamma alpha for some gamma. The path that goes this way, it could wind around in a completely different way. You know, it goes to the same points. So the path from alpha to beta, it could just be like some really simple little thing, whereas the path from alpha prime to beta, you can't really tell a priori. It could be some incredibly complicated thing. even if alpha and alpha prime are equivalent. So just to give you some sense that you can't just figure out what the equivalence classes of cusps are up here and just consider paths between those. You won't get everything that way. All right, so now let's try to make a computational theory for dealing with this picture, the picture being this one right here. How to compute in that picture. It's easier. So way up here, let's define some sort of universal object, M2, which is, it's all formal Z linear combinations of pairs alpha theta. Where alpha and beta are in P1 and Q. And we want to quotient out on the equivalence relation. Since we want these things to somehow give us some sense of homology, they should. We want this to be in some sense the homology relative to the cusps of the upper halfling. That's what we're going to try to model. So our secret idea here is that this should quote be, and I'm not defining this, the homology of the entire upper half plane. Relative to the cusps P1 and Q. So that's the secret thing that we're trying to model. This is secret, so I don't have to define it. So it's a secret motivation. So here's what the equivalence relation is. Well, draw a picture. So you have rational numbers alpha, beta, and gamma. And we consider the path from alpha to beta, or the class of the path from alpha to beta, then the class of the path from beta to gamma, and then a path from gamma back to alpha. Then this is a boundary of something, so it should be zero in homology. So here's one of the relations. You want that alpha beta plus beta gamma plus gamma alpha is equal to zero. Okay? That is, if you go around the boundary of something like this, then you should get zero. That is the notion of homology, that should be zero. A special case of this is that alpha beta plus beta alpha. I'm just setting gamma equal to alpha plus alpha alpha. Well, alpha alpha should certainly be zero since it's just like a little dot right there. Or if you like the loop that goes back to itself, which certainly the boundary of something, that's zero. So we can think of it this way as alpha beta is equal to minus beta alpha. So you can switch the ordering and it changes the sign. In other words, you consider this class, and then you add to it the class in the other direction. It cancels out and you just get zero. So those are two relations, and M2 is supposed to be the quotient of the free abelian group on all pairs alpha beta, modulo these relations, and modulo any torsion. I want the resulting thing to be torsion free. I'm just demanding that. So modulo any torsion also. So it should have no elements of finite order.
The reason that could be relevant is if, for example, if you set beta equal to gamma equal to alpha, then you have alpha alpha plus alpha alpha plus alpha alpha equals zero. That says three times alpha alpha is equal to zero. And if I didn't impose the condition that I'm modding out by torsion, I wouldn't know that alpha alpha is zero. I'd only know that three times alpha alpha is zero. That's simply not going to be useful for us to have those extra torsion relations.
So just mod out by the torsion. So the thing is, this is a free abelian group. So we're going to want something that's a free abelian group.
Okay, so any questions about this? Yes, please.
So first you mod out by some equivalence relation, and then the thing you have is no longer free.
Right.
And you're saying you mod out by the torsion again.
Yes. It's an abelian group that need not be free, but it is not free, and mod out by the torsion subgroup. And if you take an abelian group and push out by this torsion subgroup, the result is torsion free. Right. Because if you had, easy exercise.
This should be the same rank then.
It's infinite rank. This thing I define is going to be infinite rank because you have these infinitely many different elements of p1 and qn. There's no other relations besides the homology and switching the order. So this is an infinite rank abelian group. Countable infinite rank abelian group.
So think of this as like z to the c, which is z to the infinity, where that's
countable. Yes, please.
You're saying we're modding out just by that one relation for all the alpha, beta, gamma.
Yeah, and by torsion. This other one is just a consequence, kind of as practice, that we understand this relation. So you just mod out by this one relation. So you take all triples, alpha, beta, and gamma, you get a whole bunch of relations, and the equivalence relation is two things are equivalent if they're their differences. A better way to say it is you mod out by the submodule generated by elements of this form, the subgroup generated by elements of this form.
Okay.
So I will write it. Just to be clearer, it's this modulo subgroup, which I'll call R for relations, where R is equal to the subgroup generated by all sums of this form. Alpha beta plus theta gamma plus gamma alpha, where alpha, beta, and gamma are allowed to range through all elements of C1 of Q. So that's an abelian group, subgroup. Yes, please. And then mod out by torsion.
So it's equivalent, just so I see how I'm understanding this.
Please.
It's equivalent to modding out by, you can concatenate past alpha to beta to gamma is alpha to gamma, mm-hmm. and then this opposite relationship.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
This is just saying that if you take this path plus the path around the other way, you get something that's equivalent to zero in homology, which is what you want. That's what you're imposing the homology relations. Yeah.
An equivalent set of relations that you can mod out by is alpha plus alpha to beta to gamma is alpha to gamma, and then this opposite thing, alpha beta is mm-hmm. minus beta alpha.
Yes. Right. Yes. That's you're right. You could just replace this by alpha beta plus beta gamma is alpha gamma.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's completely. That's another way to think about it.
Yeah, so I'm just trying to understand. So if we have R is the entire group generated by these relations, mm-hmm. I'm trying to understand what extra torsion there would be.
It's just things like if you set alpha equal to beta equal to gamma, that's alpha alpha plus alpha alpha plus alpha alpha. That's three alpha alpha.
So
that's in R. And if you push it out, then you get this symbol alpha alpha won't be zero. In this presentation I've given, but three times it'll be zero. It won't be zero, actually, I think.
Are there any others that get the...
Why don't we just not out by...
I think there's a two version also, unfortunately. So you could increase R by simply adding in all alpha alphas. I think there's a problem with two torsion. Because I think you could, actually, if you supplement this by adding in all things alpha alpha, and also alpha beta plus beta alpha equals zero, I think that's enough.
Okay.
But I'm not 100% certain of that. I think that would be enough, though. Okay? Any other questions? Does anybody not understand what's going on at all and want to ask a question? Just look at the board. Are there symbols there? Something no sense at all.
Absolutely.
Go ahead. Ask. Just say you're completely lost. Fair enough. Can anybody summarize in one sentence what's going on? Or in Maki? Feel free to give it a shot.
What's the homology of H, comma, P?
Sorry, remember this is secret, so it's not supposed to mean anything?
Is that a union?
Yeah, this is an H star. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm trying to write down this thing. And this thing up here, this formal thing which I'm denoting M2 for weight 2 modular symbols, it's supposed to be this, except I haven't defined this. Whatever this is, it should be the same thing as this thing, okay? That's the weight two modular symbols. Okay?
You said this sentence a while ago, but I forgot exactly what it was, but you made modular symbols for a way of calculating this tomology.
Yes. Yes. I haven't got there yet.
Understand that by
now? No, absolutely not.
Okay.
See, I haven't given you the modular symbols that give you the homology of x, 0, and n yet. They're a quotient of this one. Let me give you that, and then I can see if that clears up any confusion. So here's this thing, and we want to compute the homology of it. And what I've done so far is told you about, I've explained, I hope, the homology of the upper half thing itself. It's something that generates, it's a huge, huge thing. You have all paths, it's the free abelian group on all paths between cusps, modulo the homology relations. It's big. It should be completely unmotivated, and you should say, you know, why would you do that? Why is that useful? Fair enough. But at least I hope that there isn't something sort of completely meaningless in here as far as I've written it on the board. You just feel, is your
secret
worried?
Motivation?
Yeah. You just don't like that? Or,
okay. Yeah.
Fair enough. Sure. That's why I didn't, that's my secret.
Your formal accommodations?
Yeah, is that the thing that's getting you? Because that gets everybody.
I think it's everything.
How about if I write down an element? So this is all abstract, there's no element. Somebody give me an element.
That is 3.
Yep.
1. 3. 1. I'm sorry. 3 times the pair. 1, 2.
Yep.
Plus 7 times the pair. 1/2. And 9.
There you are. See, there's an explicit element. It's the formal 3 copies of this one and 7 copies of that one.
So it's just like
you take any coefficients that are integers.
It's like polynomials, except for like 3x squared plus 4y or whatever, except you know, except x and y's, you have pairs of rational points out of beta.
It's a good explanation.
4 square root of 2, 1 would not be it. And you know, 1/2, 1, 2 wouldn't be it because you're only allowed to have integer coefficients. So like say instead of the 3 you had 1/2 times the breadth of 1, 2, that's not allowed either,
right?
Because and that's a group. If that's a group, because you need to go out to add them, and they all have inverses.
So the reason why inverses is that you just write down this plus this. It's just formal addition. You don't actually combine them, other than using the relation.
Yeah, it's lovely. So when you see this, you shouldn't think, I need to simplify it to something else. It's just, it's done. There's nothing more to do.
Like you say you're allowed to add these. You're allowed to write down this element of z times this point plus this element.
If you named every single pair of rational points, like say you named, one pair x1, another pair x2, another pair x3. So like, you know, 1, 2 is x1, 1/2, 9 is x2, and you know, you have tons of x's, right? Then all this is just polynomials in x1, x2, x3. Well, all, you can't have x1 squared. Like you can only have, you know, like 3x1 plus 12x2 plus 7x3. That's it. It's
okay.
The point, they don't mean anything.
Except that there's the one thing, though, is that if you have, say, there's a little bit of simplification you can sometimes do. So the point of these relations is that you're allowed to simplify a little bit. If you go like that, and then back, then that's the same thing as 0. So this is equal to 0 in M2. That's the one thing. It's not just, so the thing up here in parentheses, before you take, or in braces, before you take the quotient, that's what you're describing. But then you allow one reduction thing that you can do. There's one way you can simplify, and that's that you're allowed to take, whenever you have sort of a sum like this that goes back, you can always change that to 0.
And if you had 0, 1 plus 0, 1, you're allowed to swap it together and call it 2, 0, 1. I mean, that's what it means.
So there's a little bit of simplification, but not too much. Okay, does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Cool. You're claiming it's just one. You don't
know. What?
I'm about to convince you it's just one.
I mean, so far.
Yeah.
So here's the thing that I'm doing. Homology H1X not event. Now I'm going to tell you what it is in terms of what I just gave you. So here's what you do. First, notice that general. There's an action of SL2Z on M2. So I need to tell you what I mean. This is modular symbols for E2. SL2Z acts on M2. Can anybody guess how you might want to make it act? You would start by making an element gamma act on a pair alpha beta and then you extend linearly. But what would be kind of a natural choice of a way to make it act? You have to give me back a pair of numbers. What would you?
Gamma alpha gamma beta.
Yeah, I mean, what else could you possibly do?
And that's the right thing to do. Gamma alpha comma gamma beta.
So that's an action. Given any single pair alpha beta, this gives you back another pair, gamma alpha and gamma beta. And if you have a linear combination of them, like down here, or up here, you just take, it would be 3 gamma of 1, gamma of 2, plus 7, gamma of a half, gamma of 9. Just make it act linearly.
So you have an action like this. And now here's what you do. Take, well, define, so here's the definition. M2 gamma 0 of n. And this means modular symbol, this is called modular symbols of weight 2 for gamma 0 of n. This is by definition M2, which is what we've been talking about all this time, modulo a certain subgroup, the subgroup generated by elements gamma x minus x, where here, actually, I'll write it a little bit more explicitly. But actually, I'll just leave it as gamma x minus x, such that gamma is in gamma 0 of n, run through all elements of gamma 0 of n, x runs through all elements of m2, and again, you quotient out by any torsion.
Okay, so it's a very important definition, so I'll just pause for a second, see if you understand it. So m2 modulo subgroup. An abelian group modulo an abelian subgroup. And modulo any torsion. Now it looks kind of disturbing because these groups, both M2 and the subgroup, are infinitely generated. They're not even finitely generated. It's kind of scary. It's not at all clear from the definition that the resulting quotient is finitely generated. In fact, it's isomorphic to the relative homology. So this is a theorem. From the 1970s. Okay, now that should make the motivation for considering this a little bit clearer. But the one big piece that's missing is how can you compute this, given that I've described it as an infinitely generated group modulo another infinitely generated and in fact complicated looking group. And the answer to that question involves essentially continued fractions and a little inductive argument, which I'll give you in a minute. So any questions about this? Again, I haven't proved this. I'm just telling you that it's a theorem that this group, this abstractly defined group, which at least looks like it has something to do with homology, it's like the homology of the upper half plane modulo the action of gamma 0 of n, in a sense. That's supposed to be the same as the homology of the upper half plane, modulo gamma 0 then. So it sounds kind of reasonable, doesn't it? At least intuitively, it makes sense that if you take the homology of the upper half plane, the homology of the upper half plane modulo gamma 0, then you get the homology of the upper half plane modulo gamma 0, then just like it's the associated block. So again, the way this is proved is one writes, well, I need to write down an explicit triangularization of x0, then figured out what the homology of that triangularization was, and realized that it is the same thing as this. You get everything from these.
So it's a topology argument. Yes?
There are triangularizations of those things?
No, the triangularization is down here on this particular topological space. It's some work, but it's you write it down. I mean, you have a description of the space as a quotient of the upper half plane, and then you maybe use a fundamental domain for the action of gamma zero then on the upper half plane. Sort of use that to construct explicitly some triangularization for that quotient space.
It's not a finite triangulation.
It is a finite triangulation. Yeah. Because it's only of the quotient. The triangularization at x0 of n is a finite, it's a compact Riemann surface. So it's a compact topological space.
How big is the actual?
I don't remember. I don't know.
Is it something horrendous or just nice but hard to figure out?
I think it's nice and it's not that hard to figure out except in a few special cases.
We should look at it. Look at the argument. Look at my notes about it. Okay, next. Now, the one thing I want to tell you today is how you compute M2 gamma 0 then.
Okay. How do you compute the space of weight 2 modular symbols for the group gamma 0 then? How is it that this can possibly be computed given that it's presented in such an infinite way?
Not assuming the theorem.
In fact, completely theorem agnostic. Forget about the theorem and think, geez, here's the definition. How can that thing be computed? I'm not going to use the theorem. I'm not going to need the theorem. The sole purpose of the theorem is motivation for why you would care. And
you don't need the theorem to prove this. It's not
deep, really, that you can compute this.
The deeper
part is that you have this isomorphism.
All right, so there are essentially, I guess, two things to do. One,
so remember, now we're computing. Modular symbols of weight 2 for gamma 0 n. So, remember that you proved in one of the homework problems that gamma 1 of n has finite index in SL2z. Okay? And the same is true of gamma 0 of n. It's even truer because gamma 1 of n is contained in gamma 0 of n. So as finite index, the index is smaller. So what that means is that you can write SL2Z as a disjoint union of the finitely many right cosets of gamma 0 of n in SL2Z. The notation is the following. Here I used R. These are sub I are elements of SL2Z. I'm using R just to remind us that they're right cosets. And here the index of gamma 0 of n in SL2Z is, since I started indexing at 0, which is maybe a bad idea, but just to consistent with my notes, it's m plus 1.
just the number of cosets. Yes, please.
Right coset means you're multiplying with the R0 from the right.
Yeah.
So it's your gamma 0 at matrix times the...
Exactly. So gamma 0 and Ri is a set, and that set, it's not a group, it's a set. It's the set of all things gamma times Ri, where gamma runs through the group gamma 0 n. And it's a group exactly when Ri is an element of gamma 0 n. Otherwise, it isn't a group. So the cosets, you know, just from basic group there. So it's a disjoint union. And for example, when n is prime, say n equals p, when there are p plus 1 cosets. And actually, in general, the cosets are in bijection. The cosets are in bijection with the elements are p1 of z mod n z. This is true even if n is composite. So in general. Here, the definition of p1 of z mod n z is the following. It's the set of pairs a, b, of integers modulo n, so the GCD of a, b, and n is equal to 1. Modulo the equivalence relation that a, b is the same as a prime, b prime, if you can rescale to get from one to the other by an element of z mod n z star. And the definition is stated explicitly in the middle of page, or near the bottom of page 34. It's just exactly what I said in words right there.
Unit multiples.
Exactly, unit multiples, unit rescaling. It's just, it's kind of like P1 of Q or P1 of Z, where you take pairs modulo units rescaling. And this fact that the cosets are in bijection with P1 of Z mod NZ from a computational point of view turns out to be extremely important. And you think, if you implement the algorithms I'll describe, you spend a huge amount of time thinking very carefully about how to efficiently compute P1 of Z mod NZ, for example, and how to efficiently look up elements of P1 of Z mod NZ in some precise sense. The bijection is pretty simple. If you have a coset representative Ri equals A, B, C, D, then that corresponds, notice that the GCD of C and D is 1, since AD minus BC is 1. This corresponds to the symbol C colon D. So, simple as that. So, well, not symbol, I said symbol. It corresponds to the pair CD, where we're thinking of P1 as the pair CD modulo equivalence. That's the bijection. In the case when n is prime, it's particularly easy to prove this, and you'll do that as a homework problem. And if you find that was too easy, do it for a composite index, composite n as well. And if you get totally stuck, you can look in John Kimono's book, where I think he gives the details. Now I can tell you how to compute that space. So remember this action, gamma alpha beta equals gamma alpha gamma beta. So this is the thing that we're trying to compute. So you have this action. Now, here's the amazing thing. If you take the single path from 0 to infinity, and then take its images under all of these coset representatives, R0 up through Rm, via this action, you will get everything. That's a finite number of paths, and you get everything. So, proposition. The paths are 0, 0 infinity, R1, 0 infinity, up through R, and 0 infinity generate, so by that I mean take the images of those paths in M2 gamma 0 then. These generate M2 gamma 0 of n,
as a group, as an abelian group. That's almost enough. It doesn't actually quite give you enough to compute this, but it tells you that this has a finite generating set. It's finitely generated by those elements. The problem is you still don't know exactly what the relations are, but fortunately you do. There's a simple description of all relations between these n plus one different modular symbols.
And I don't think we'll be able to get to that today, but that is theorem 3.2.7 on page 36. And there's a slightly different notation there, so if you flip directly to that, it won't quite make sense. But you get essentially, you get a whole bunch of two-term and three-term relations. They're completely explicit. It just involved these guys, and it's a theorem that they give you all relations.
So you take these n plus one symbols, you quotient out by
these two-term and three-term relations, which are completely explicit. The quotient is this. It's the same thing. So this is computable. So the thing I want to convince you of today is that this proposition is true.
Modulo gamma x is the same thing as x and modulo any torsion. And you want to show that a completely arbitrary element alpha beta is a z linear combination of symbols of this form. Okay, that's the thing to show. So first notice that alpha beta is alpha is equivalent to, or is equal to, in here, or even at M2, to alpha 0 plus 0 beta. And that's just one of the homology relations. That's the one that you like, in fact. So, now you have that. And moreover, this is minus 0 alpha plus 0 beta. So, if I can convince you that 0 alpha, that this symbol, is the sum of things of that form, I'll have convinced you that this one is as well. Okay? So, it suffices to consider 0 alpha, which I will write as 0 comma...
There's a lot of different choices for letters. I think I say b over a. Yes, 0
b over a. I'm writing alpha in lowest terms as a quotient of two integers b over a. So, consider this symbol. Now, I'm going to give you an inductive proof that I found in a paper of Mazur, Tate, and Teitelbaum. The paper is about defining p-adic L functions, but in there they give an inductive proof that the statement is true, that the proposition is true, and the inductive proof is very direct and very sort of easy to believe, and I haven't seen it anywhere else. So. I'll show you what that is. There's also a proof involving continued fractions in the notes on page 35. So the inductive proof is very direct, but it's kind of strange. So here's how it goes. So what we're going to do is induct on A. So here A is an integer. It's between, 0 and, we can assume it's positive. So A is an integer, and it's positive. So we're going to induct on the size of A. So our assumption is that this is true for any smaller a's. Actually, let's induct on a greater than or equal to 0. And our assumption is that this is true for smaller a's than the a we're considering here. So the base case is a equals 0, which means the path from 0 to infinity. And that's OK because that corresponds to the identity coset. So that's OK. So now we can assume that we know this statement whenever you have a denominator that's smaller than our a. So you can write anything 0 comma anything with a smaller denominator in terms of this thing. So now let's use that to prove the result. So assume
A is greater than 0. Now, here's the sort of funny. So what you do is you simply construct up, and the only way you can think to do it, a matrix that's in SL2Z. So choose A prime in Z such that B A prime is congruent to 1 modulo A. And you can do that because why?
Tell the elementary number 3 question. You're looking at me like. Yeah, exactly. Just want to make sure you're fine.
B and A are co-prime. So you can find an inverse. So there's an inverse, there you have it, and I'm just choosing some integer that is an inverse. Now you let B prime be B A prime minus 1 over A. And that's an integer because, well, by definition of congruence. Okay, so now I have an integer B prime and integer A prime. And notice that if you rewrite this a little bit as, write it as 1 equals B A prime minus B prime A. So there's a matrix with determinant 1. So we have delta B, B, A, B prime, A prime. Notice that delta has to be 1, since B A prime minus A B prime, which is this, is equal to 1. So this is in SL2Z. And SL2Z is a union of these right cosets. So this matrix is of the form an element of gamma 0 of n times one of our right coset representatives, R sub I. So f of gamma is the gamma 0 of n, and Ri is one of the right coset representatives. Let's start it off. Okay, so that's the first thing to do. And now, now here's the second little part of the trick. So proof continued. So you take 0 B over A, and you subtract off 0 B prime over A prime. And that difference is equal to B prime over A prime comma B over A. So far we haven't used that our modular symbol is a modular symbol for gamma 0 of n, not just a universal modular symbol. So we haven't used these extra relations. Now we're going to use them. So this thing, I think we are. Yeah. What have we done so far? We haven't really used much. What? Are you lost at some point?
Yeah, I don't see how you get past A equals 1. How you get to A equals 1 equals 0.
Oh.
So A equals 1, and then B prime's not less than A.
Okay, well, I'll do that one. I'll do one separately.
Okay.
Okay? I'll do one separately, because it's actually good practice with modular symbols. Okay. Let's do A equals 1.
In case you're worried, it's always good to do like the first few cases of an induction by hand. So let's do, before we go further, let's deal with the case A equals 1. So it will suffice to show that...
Well, I just haven't even seen how I thought it should be the base case A equals 0.
Okay, well, let's prove that the base case A equals 1 is true, and then you'd be okay, right?
Yeah.
Then you'd be happy.
So this is written, the proof for A equals, for the denominator equal to 1 is actually, it's in here. Let me see where did I put that. Just wanted to point it out. It's just a little trick. Yeah, but I don't state it as being that. I just, it's example 3, 2, 1. So
here's the trick. You have, maybe that's the only sense in which you use gamma 0 of n. Let's see. So you have at least one way in which you use gamma 0 of n. This is an element of gamma 0 of n, right? And you have these gamma 0 of n relations. So the symbol infinity 0 is equal to gamma of infinity gamma 0. This is the gamma relation for modular symbols for gamma 0 of n. These two are equal. But this one is equal to infinity plus 1, which is just infinity again. Gamma fixes infinity, and gamma 0 is 1. So you have infinity 0 is equal to infinity 1, and that implies that
Well, I mean, you can write it however you want, but it implies that the path from 0 to 1 is trivial. So 0 equals infinity 1 minus infinity 0, just taking the difference of all sides, and then swap it around, and you get infinity 1 plus 0 infinity, which by your favorite relation is 0 and 1. So you see that 0, 1 is 0. And you could replace this by that matrix for any n, and you get the same argument for any n. And that's the base case of the induction. Because the denominator here, but let me call this b instead of n, to be exactly the same. Mm-hmm. Okay, are you happy now?
I've now proven the case when the denominator is equal to 1.
Oh yeah, I guess it follows through.
Not only have I showed that it's in terms of these, it's actually 0.
It actually is just that relation.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. No. Good.
So and again, I'm proving it stronger. Instead of proving that when a equals 1, it's a linear combination of these, I prove the stronger statement that it's 0.
0. Yeah.
Yeah. So for any n, if you consider the symbol 0, 1 in M2 gamma 0 of n, that symbol is 0. The path from 0 to 1 always gives you a trivial homology class. Sometimes classes are like that. In contrast, 0 infinity,
it's a theorem that for sufficiently large n, 0 infinity never gives you the 0 homology class. Well, that would be kind of bad. Because, I mean, if it did give you the 0 homology class, then the whole thing would be 0, which
I've already mentioned can't happen. So the path from 0 to 1 is always the 0 homology class, and the path from 0 to infinity is almost never the 0 homology class. I guess for n greater than or equal to 2, it would fail to be the 0 class. Okay, so the proof's continued. So we have the path from 0 to b over a minus the path from 0 to b prime over a. I'm considering this. I haven't not like copying it from anywhere else. Just considering this difference. And that's equal to this by the homology relation. And this thing is our matrix that we considered over there, delta, applied to 0 infinity. Right? Because if you apply delta to 0, you have b prime over a prime, and you apply delta to infinity, you get b over a. And now delta was gamma times ri to infinity. And gamma, remember, we're working with modular symbols for gamma 0 of n. So gamma times any modular symbol is just equal to that modular symbol. Because this is all taking place in the space, this is in m2 gamma 0 of n. That's it. I've shown that 0, b over a, I've shown that that's something ri 0 infinity plus 0 b prime over a prime. And notice that the a prime is smaller. A prime is between 0 and a minus 1 inclusive. Well, actually, between 1 and a minus 1. Yeah.
What did you say the delta represents in front of the 0?
Here? Oh, this is the matrix that I wrote down over here.
Oh.
That's what it is. It's just that, so remember the action of, there's an action of matrices on modular symbols, and this is if you figure out what the action of delta is on 0 infinity, it's equal to this thing that I wrote down here. Because this is, by definition, delta of 0, comma delta of infinity. And delta of 0 is b prime over a prime, and delta of infinity is b over a, from the definition of the action. And see, this a prime is smaller, so you've written this in terms of something times a coset plus this other thing. This other thing, by induction, can be written in terms of a coset representative times, well, sum of coset representatives times 0 infinity. So that proves the proposition completely. Questions? Does it make sense? Good. So I've now proved that every single modular symbol for gamma 0 of n is a z, an integer linear combination of symbols of the special form. What?
It really doesn't work the way it's proved here without the base case one.
Yeah, you're right.
I don't, well, actually, I haven't thought about it. Let's see. So why doesn't it work for the base case? So you have to be able to prove 1 from 0.
Does this work? So let's say this is 1. We'll try to run this argument and see if it gets just to 0 or not. So if A is 1, then the A prime is 1. Ah, so that's
yeah, exactly.
But no, actually, you can take A prime to be 0 because working log 1. Yeah, so A prime is 0.
Okay.
And then this is minus 1 over 1. So B prime is minus 1. So what kind of matrix would you get? Minus 1, and then A prime is 0, and A is 1, and what is B? B is whatever, it's some integer. Say 1, for example.
Yeah, it works.
Yeah, I think maybe it does work, actually.
Zero.
Yeah.
This is 0, it's counter to 1, mod 1. Stupidly.
Yeah, exactly. So
you have to make sure to choose the A prime to be less than A. So if I put this 0 less than A equal A prime less than A,
yeah,
then
it actually works in all cases. You just need the base case of 0 in the induction.
But I mean, you have to do that anyway, otherwise the whole thing doesn't work.
Agreed. Okay, so that's one proof. Another proof involves continued fractions. You write down the continued fraction expansion of B over A. And then this is again given in the notes. Then you look at the partial convergence, which are sequence of numbers pn over qn. And the theory of continued fractions, so it's like page 3 if you go through a book on continued fractions, tells you that basically the successive partial quotients give you matrices in SL2z. And if you just sort of work it out, you see that you end up getting explicitly, directly from that, 0b over a as a sum of things of this form. That's really what continued fractions do for you, is they give you that representation. That's it's described in the notes. And in practice, when you do computations, if you have a modular symbol and you want to write it in terms of symbols of this form, r, I, 0, infinity, you really do compute the continued fraction expansion of your rational number. It takes some time. You compute it, and then you compute the partial convergence. And you take those, and you get the corresponding linear combination. Okay?
So the partial convergence are actually the r mods, or do you have to do anything else?
Let me think.
That have as entries BK, AK minus 1, the game, BK minus 1, minus 4, AK minus 1. Those are RIs, are
oh, yeah, yeah, they're in SLTs.
Yeah. You have to find sort of the equivalent RI, but you end up, basically you take the pairs of partial convergence, you take the denominator, the sort of, well, not really the denominator, but...
it's very clear.
Yeah, it's in the notes, so...
It tells you what the RIs are.
Yeah, you take the denominators, and those determine your Poisson representative. So, yeah, it's really given in on page 35, right in the middle. Yes, please.
So I'm looking on page 34, and I'm trying to run this mm-hmm. through mm-hmm. for the case n is 5.
Yes.
So I presume if I'm doing this correctly, I would get like r0 is like 0 infinity, r1 is 0, 1.
Wait, hold on. The r's are matrices. They're coset representatives.
I mean, sorry, r2 yeah. times 0 yeah. infinity. I mean, the symbol r2.
Yeah, yeah.
So the symbol r2 would be like 0 and a half.
Yeah.
And
sure.
So then the last symbol, you would get infinity comma 0 again?
I hope not.
Because if you do 0, negative 1, and 1, and 0.
Maybe. Maybe you do. So you get 0 infinity, and the other one you get, yeah, you get, yeah, it's redundant.
Zero.
The last one's redundant.
And then we also got a 0 yeah. 1 at some point.
So yeah. In fact, you can. There are two. There are some sort of obvious relations that you get directly from the homology relations, like switching the order,
mm-hmm.
and those directly lead to the two-term relations that allow you to half the number of things you have to consider in theorem 327.
Mm-hmm.
And the three-term relations in theorem 327 come directly from the three-term homology relations, and it turns out those are all the relations.
Okay.
So I am going to stop. Next time, I'm going to talk about Hecke operators and how to compute them, and a little bit more about how to compute spaces of modular symbols, because I haven't given you everything when I talk about the relations. Since you have 10 minutes, I wonder if you could do me a huge favor. Could you take out a piece of paper and write some sort of quick evaluation of like how you think the course is going for you and any ideas you have for improvement, completely anonymous, and then give it to somebody. Could you take them and just put them in my box when you're done? I greatly appreciate it. It's just so I can get a better sense of, you know, whether you like greatly dislike something about the lecture.